This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for staying with us. Now, on to rivers. As a matter of discussion, small urban rivers like Selangor's Klang River are among the most polluting. According to statistics, it's part of the more than 1,000 rivers globally that account for 80% of the plastic waste found in the ocean.
And this is based on a report by the journal Science Advances, which estimated that these rivers contribute anywhere from 800,000 tons to 2.7 million tons of plastic waste each year. In fact, together with rivers in India and the Philippines, our Klang River is the second highest riverine emitter of plastic into the ocean.
But the Klang River has seen cleanup efforts for years now, especially after the Selangor government identified it as as a major contributor of waste. Now, the state government hopes that with a successful clean river, it can be a role model for other rivers in the country and will be able to create economic value. But as long as domestic waste and littering continues and people refuse to change their ways, will this yet be another failed attempt at taking care of our environment?
Well, to answer that question, we are now talking to Charlie Koh, who formerly worked on the River of Life project and is now the chief executive of Urbanmetry. Thank you for talking to us, Charlie. Were you surprised at the Science Advances Journal's results showing that the Klang River is one of the most polluted rivers in the world?
I have been keeping track of the status of Klang River for a long time now, since my work-related interest peaked in the River of Life project 10 years back, actually. So I do keep in touch with people who are working on the subject over time. And I think even the general public were aware of a couple of initiatives internationally that already highlighted the pollution in Klang River. Specifically, there was a cleanup machine that was deployed in Klang River, at the mouth of Klang River, either last year or the year before that. So that gained some public notice to the health of our rivers since then. So I don't think it's a surprise to most people that Klang River is that polluted, but I think a lot of people don't realize the composition of that waste and what is in that waste, right, that is so polluting.
So according to the study, Klang River emits 1.33% of plastic waste into the ocean. And if you want to compare that, the India's Ganges River emits only 0.63% and is used and frequented by millions of its citizens. What does this say about our waste habits, and how do we educate Malaysians to shift our attitudes?
So I think there's two things that pops up when I look at these numbers. One is the state of urbanization along the rivers for both Klang River and for the Ganges. So there is a couple of differences, right? So the level of urbanization and the wealth that is surrounding the river also contributes to the amount of trash or plastic trash that goes into the river. So as you know, rivers have a couple of types of waste. There are also the not just solid waste, there are also, you know, chemical or sewage and bio type waste that goes into the river. So I think the composition also differs by what kind of activities is surrounding both rivers. That's one. And the second thing is that, of course, you'll be saying that, oh yeah, there's a far more developed countries that having very clean rivers. And that's true. But also that they prioritize the waste mitigation or waste diversion from the rivers or with their urban development. And we actually haven't done that very much. So that is a key difference between the two.
Now, Charlie, this might sound like a rather straightforward question, but, you know, can you help us understand how having clean rivers can help as a source of water supply?
So this is an interesting question, and I think my answer is not going to be so straightforward. A lot of people don't realize that the source of your water supply actually comes upriver. Rarely the water supply comes from the mouth of the Klang River, for example, right? It comes from Ampang and the catchment water catchment areas itself. So because of the way we have designed the intaking of the river for our water supply, that's also the reason why people don't care about the river so much, right? Because to them, whatever pollution that I am doing downriver, it doesn't actually affect water supply. That's a lot of times they think that way. It is true and untrue as well. So in terms of the amount of pollution that comes in, it kills a lot of the biolife in the river along the way, as and when you don't have enough clean water upstream. So as the pollution is concentrated downstream, the upstream amount of water affects the level of pollution downriver. But I think that is the mentality of most citizens. They don't care about the stuff downstream because the thinking is that water comes from upstream anyway, right? So the pollution will get worse, the bio and marine life will get worse as and when this mentality persists. If your urbanization increases and the places that you need to draw water from increases from upstream to lower stream, and you need to build new water treatment plants or new water supply intake, this becomes more and more difficult, right? Because you've already polluted the stuff downstream. So it is a dynamic issue. Your city grows, and as your city grows, you need more and more water sources, right? So that's why a lot of states who has very polluted river and they can't take those water from those river sources are now having to resolve to import water from other states.
So Charlie, if you can, talk to us about the river care programs we've got and how successful they've been and if we need to be doing more.
I'm just going to, you know, break it down into two major ways of caring for the river, right? So the River of Life was a big program. A lot of people concentrated on like the beautification part, and you know, there was a lot of controversy around that. But actually a major part of the spending was focused on actually cleaning the river. And when we say cleaning the river, there's a couple of things, right? That is the sewerage upgrade. Actually, a lot of the cost was actually concentrated on upgrading our sewerage system and diverting that sewage from the river to not pollute the river further. So there are all these sort of infrastructure investments that's being put in to clean up the river and divert the pollution from the river. There's also the, of course, the education part, which is largely neglected, I have to say this, because Malaysians, both government and the private citizen, we like to buy things to solve our problem. We don't like to change our behavior. And unfortunately, this is a very, very difficult, and it's because the ROI is very hard to see. A lot of people don't like to invest in it, or they see it as investing in it, and I don't see the brick and mortar of it, right? So convincing stakeholders to actually invest in education is tough. There are quite a number of NGOs that do very, very, very good work in educating the public, having river care programs, etc., that they feel purely by their love for the river. And I really commend them for doing that. But unfortunately, you know, their efforts are often sort of seen as this, you know, by the way, we have this, and it's not sort of the center of the program. And I think that is a shame because, you know, that enthusiasm can only go so far if it's not properly funded, right? So I urge the authorities and I urge, you know, private sectors to look into that a little bit more and funding this sort of education program. Because at the end of the day, who's polluting the river, right? It's us.
So it really requires an all-of-society approach to address river pollution. We're also seeing the government working on a national marine litter policy, and they say it's going to be guided by a multi-stakeholder approach. What do you think is needed in order for a policy like this to be effective? What would you like to see?
You're bringing up quite a lot of memories here. So when I was running the River of Life, it was really rewarding, but also very painful, right? Because Klang River, right? It's under the jurisdiction of at least four ministries. Can you imagine? Four ministries and over 40 over departments. A policy is great, right? And a national marine litter policy sounds great. And a multi-stakeholder approach sounds great too, which is what River of Life was about. You know, we wanted to be a multi-stakeholder. We wanted to engage with all the 44 departments and public as well. We wanted to get people participating in it and make sure the motives are aligned. But the main challenge we had was actually the legal framework. So a lot of the laws governing the management of pollution in the river actually are sprinkled across four ministries. And a lot of times, the people who are enforcing these laws are actually not in the ministry of the people who are the caretakers of the law, for example. Along the river, the land next to the river is actually owned by the Department of Irrigation. okay, under the Environmental Ministry. But they actually don't have the manpower or the capacity or the funding to actually enforce or catch or monitor anybody who's doing dumping along the river. They actually rely on local councils like VBKL and MPPJ, whose hands are also very full and very resource stricken, to enforce and monitor and catch these pollutants, right? So can you imagine you have the law sitting in one ministry, but the enforcers is another ministry or another department that is entirely different level of government than you. So I think I commend policies and I commend the focus and the attention paid to it. But I think at the end of the day, somebody needs to draw out the end-to-end. If you want to stop the pollutant, who is actually doing it? What law is he using? What power and funding is he empowered to do that? That sort of thing is actually quite practical. So, I would prefer to see that kind of execution detail versus a policy, but a policy is a good start.
That was Charlie Koh, Chief Executive of Urban Metri and former project manager on the River of Life project. I mean, just the apathy in the system among Malaysians, and also I couldn't help but notice the fact that their responsibility is spread across four ministries.
That's right. I mean, the discussion with Charlie really reminded me of a conversation that I had with Professor Datuk Dr. Wan Ramli Wan Daud, who's a fellow at the Academy of Sciences Malaysia, and he chaired a task force that looked into the lessons learned from the Sungai Kim Kim pollution incident, if you recall that.
Yeah.
That happened a few years ago, where thousands of school children and residents in Pasir Gudang were sickened by a toxic element that was found in the water and in the surrounding region. And he also spoke about this miscoordination or just agencies working in silos, no one really sure who's going to take what action. It's stark, and it's a clear gap in the way we handle things at the moment.
But when you think about the stakeholders, right, so you've got the government on one hand, and then you've got like businesses who are polluting, you know, the river. And then you've got individuals like ourselves, and even Charlie uses the word us, right, mm-hmm. us. So we contribute to the waste. So I think the education or the coordination has to be across the board.
Mm-hmm.
But is that due to the fact that we don't treat these rivers as something that is precious,
mm.
that we should look after? We have this sense of like, oh, it's there, but it serves no purpose. So, we then treat it badly.
No, you're right. It's a collective responsibility and also the policy direction. We just need to be much more coordinated. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.